show is sponsored by Trail Run Events, host of amazing races in beautiful places. Their next race is the Valley Crest Trail's 10K and half marathon, happening Saturday, June 11th on the historic Mulholland Fire Road. Treating runners to valley and ocean views, this race is located outside the hustle of Greater Los Angeles, but close enough for day tripping or sightseeing. These distances are perfect for trail newbies or those needing a training race. For a complete list of races, visit trailrunevents.com or follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. More ultra, less lady.
All things ultra.
All things ladies.
Dirt runner.
Trail runner.
Mother runner.
Badass.
Mountain runner.
Welcome to the Ultra Ladies Show. I'm your host, Sarah Terhar.
And I'm your host, Nancy Shura Durbin. And every week, we're here to educate, share stories and humor that help inspire you to run your first ultra or your best ultra.
Whether you're on a run, commuting to work, or busy parenting, get ready for some laughter and some real talk about this gritty sport we all love.
Running mountains since 1994, the Ultra Ladies, based in Los Angeles, have been helping provide fun, safe, and sustainable mountain running for women who remain an underrepresented group in the sport.
Hi, Nancy. How's it going?
Hi, Sarah. It's going great. You know, we're in December in California, and even though the sun is out, it's really cold here, and we've had some rain. What do you think? How's your life going this week?
Yeah, it's definitely a busy time for everybody right now, trying to balance everything around the holidays. Every year is stressful, regardless of whether you celebrate the holidays or not. It's just busier everywhere. But as for the weather, I don't mind a little of this, even though I love California weather. I'm originally from the Pacific Northwest in Oregon and Washington, so I don't mind a little bit of cold now and then.
And the rain we're getting, it's good that we get rain because our hills will finally turn green for just a few short months here in Southern California. So yes.
Which is always enjoyable, for sure. For sure. Well, today's topic is ultra running. For those of you that don't know what ultra running is, we're going to talk about what it is, ultra running 101, and as we call it on the show today, what the fuck is ultra running?
Yep. WTF. Well, Sarah, what the fuck is ultra running?
Oh my gosh. So ultra running, for those of you that are runners that may be listening or you may have found our show and you aren't sure what an ultra is, let's break it down for you. For those of you that are experienced, bear with us for a little bit. We'll try to keep it light and fun for you, and there'll be more episodes for you ahead. So ultra running is any distance that is 31 miles or greater. Some people technically say it's anything greater than a marathon, but with ultras, you often have other things involved, like the elements. It's frequently done in the mountains, and you might have wildlife. You might have other factors that you have to take into account when you run a distance that long or that demanding with elevation and
you're going to miss, for sure, you're going to miss lunch. And depending on the length of your ultra marathon, you might miss dinner.
Yeah.
And you might miss breakfast the next morning as well. So it takes a bit more planning than just running a marathon, right, Sarah?
Right. And so we're already off to a good start of probably scaring a few folks because they're like, what? You miss breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Who wants to do that? But the good news is you get to have it on the trail. You don't miss it entirely. It just might look a little different. So you might get a sunrise while you're starting out there on the trail, but you also get to eat your food while you're watching that sunrise from a mountaintop.
Right, right. Couldn't agree more. Yep. And it's finger food mostly.
It is.
No utensils needed. You just grab and go and always tried and true. So when it comes to nutrition, hydration, you have to do a bit more planning. You need to make sure that your tummy can handle what they're serving. So you test it all out in your training ahead of time. So I like to think that it really does take more planning as well as more training.
Sure. So when you run 31 miles or longer, you're out there long enough that your body requires that you hydrate and take in nutrition on the fly. So that means carrying your nutrition with you or planning ahead to have that somewhere accessible, whether it be a halfway point and you have food available at a vehicle, or you have crewing or somebody helping you out. Also have to plan ahead for water if your pack or whatever you're carrying doesn't carry enough hydration for your outing. But you need to make sure that you have those things so that you can support your effort for the day. And without doing that, your body can bonk or crash and it's not healthy for it. So sometimes these efforts for ultras, when you get out there and you're running really long, it might be even longer. Like maybe it's a multi-day race or maybe multi-night and multi-day. So you will need sleep in those cases. You know, if you're out for 6 days, you're not going to do without sleep for 6 days. If you're out for 2 days, yeah, you might do without sleep, but much longer, you're going to need at least short bouts of sleep in order to make it to the end.
When I ran my first 100 in 1997, I remember someone asking me, how many days did it take? Like you went and slept at night, didn't you? And ran the next day. So it's a more or less continual thing, especially for the average runner that I consider myself to be. You've got that clock ticking. And so it can be sometimes, you know, trying to stay ahead of the clock, and takes, like I said, a bit of training, a bit of planning. And yeah, you're out there missing meals and you're out there enjoying sunrises and sunsets for sure.
So for our newbies to ultra, or our newbies that are trail runners that are considering ultra, when you're out in an ultra event, there is something called a cutoff time. And a cutoff time is meant to keep you safe as well as everyone else in the race safe. You've got to be at a certain point in the distance by a certain time in order to make cutoff. And if you can't, that means that you basically DNF, you do not finish, and you're pulled from the race, or you must quit or resign from the race at that point. And that is just, again, to keep yourself safe as well as the rest of the people in the race safe. No one wants to be out there twice as long for a single runner, and no one wants to be looking for a runner that may have been in some kind of danger because they couldn't go a certain pace and they're out for extra long hours or into maybe really cold hours of the day, or there's lots of different factors that go into that.
So I think beyond the 50K, the next step up in ultra distance running is the 50-mile race or run. And that's always been my favorite distance because you do get to go home and have a nice warm dinner after you finish the race and sleep in your own bed. So you're getting that ultra benefit of 10 or 11 or 12 hours out there running, but you still can finish and have a normal sleep at night. So that's always been my favorite distance, the 50 mile.
Those are some great perks. Your own bed, hot meal, a shower.
And not having to run through the night for sure.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
And then of course you've got the 100K, then you've got the 100 mile. And lately in these last 5 years or so, ultra distances have really shot up now to beyond 100 mile events.
Yes, they have. Now, some other factors that go into this, we've talked about some of the basic needs that go into ultras, but for these really long races, you know, you're going to have an entire team that's crewing you. You're going to maybe need a place to sleep, not just a dirt nap. There is such a thing as a dirt nap. You might need a full meal, not just some grab and go. You might need a change of clothes, change of shoes. Some of those things are really significant when you're dealing with the elements out there and these super long distances. And they're really imperative to your success of finishing them. If you take into account heat, for example, Nancy, you have some experience with that.
I do. Having run Badwater, and even when I finished the Angeles Crest 100 back in 2001, that race was held in late September. And it was 106 degrees in Pasadena when I finished the race. But of course, Badwater, anyone who knows about Badwater knows that at least half of that race is run in temperatures over 100 degrees. Yep. And it can get, like the year I ran Badwater, it was up to about 129 or 130.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So lots of things get thrown at you. And of course, the longer you're running, the more hours you spend out there in the elements, the less resistant your body is. You know, things begin to fatigue. And so your ability to tolerate the heat and the distance and so forth can sometimes be really challenging in a longer event. You can handle it for 8 or 10 hours, but maybe not for 60 hours if that's a 150-mile event, let's say.
Sure.
Also, in addition to standalone races, like Moab 240 is one that comes to my mind out here in the West. And in addition to those kinds of events, they have multi-day events that are now becoming really popular. I know there are some 72-hour and 6-day events. One that I can think of is Across the Years Ultra Marathon in Arizona, is coming up soon over New Year's Eve weekend. So you get to run out the old year and run in the new year. But these races are getting as long as 6-day challenges, you know, and people are really taking naps and having full meals, like you said, Sarah, and then just getting out there and running a few more hours and then recovering and warming up and running a few more hours until 6 days is over. And they can run, you know, hundreds of miles, 300 miles, 400 miles mm-hmm. over that period of time.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Amazing that the human body can do.
I did a little Googling homework. I did some research for this. Uh-huh. And according to what I found, there's a little bit of information on the history of ultra marathon running that I didn't even know. And it's pretty interesting. So what we found out is the 6-day events grew out of solo challenges that were made, where people would challenge each other and they would wager and bet on these, what they were at the time called ultra distance walkers or pedestrians. So these weren't races. These were just challenges to one another. Those started during the late 1700s that people were, you know, bravado, and I can do 6 days. I can cover more miles in 6 days than you can. And they would place money wagers on it and so forth. And so that's kind of where we found the 6-day events began. Continuing the history of the 6-day events, I found out that in 1874, the 500-mile barrier was broken in a 6-day event. Now, again, these weren't races, really. They were personal challenges that people were making to each other. But in 1875, P.T. Barnum, we all know him from Ringling Brothers, Barnum mm-hmm. and Bailey days, he put on the very first 6-day race. in history in the Hippodrome in New York City. Mm-hmm. And tens of thousands of people came to watch the race. And the race, yeah, I mean, it was a freak show, right? Like, I guess it's, maybe these things where people dance until they drop.
Yeah.
You know, the curiosity was there and people were paying money to go watch this.
Wow.
Which means they're 6-day spectators too, weren't they?
Yep. Wow. Yeah. That's like the, like you said, maybe one of the earlier versions of the freak show, they call it.
There were tens of thousands. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
They were, the runners were the circus back then.
Sure.
It also taught me, and I learned that in 1928, a sports promoter named Charles C. Pyle held the first foot race across America from coast to coast. Hmm. And that, of course, is a stage race of some sort, you know, because unless it's a relay, there is not going to be nonstop running. The person's going to have to take a few nights here and there as they push forward from coast to coast. I know a good friend who ran coast to coast at least once. His name is John Radich. And I've known John Radich for many, many years. He's a multiple Badwater race finisher, Angeles Crest finisher. And when I was living in Chama, New Mexico, Larry and I, we were headed west to our California home to put on Bulldog 50K, I think it was, because we were the race directors. And we saw John's progress on his daily calendar, and we knew that he was going to be in Flagstaff, Arizona. So we stopped there on the way, and we found him and had breakfast with him. And it was really interesting to pick his brain as he was doing pushing a baby stroller solo.
Wow.
Without any support along the way.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, coast to coast, run across America, REM, those are pretty popular events also.
So you hear that, moms, when you're out there pushing that stroller during that run, that workout, there you go. It's been done. The extremes. Extreme stroller sports. Yeah.
That's right. And that's kind of training on the run too, because that's got to provide quite a bit of good training to be pushing that weight up hills.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I remember running miles with my daughter. Yeah, for sure. All right. So also, for those of you wondering about, well, how many people are doing this or what's going on with it? So ultras and ultra running has grown tremendously. And if you just Google it, you'll find there is staggering numbers out there right now. Ultra running in general has grown 345% since 1996. And that was 34,401 ultra runners to now 611,098. That figure is from 2018. Yeah. So we're going from 96 to 2018 there. For those figures, that is a lot.
It is a lot. And I started ultra running before 1996, and I would go to some of these local California races, 50K or 50 mile distances, and there would be maybe 125 runners, and maybe 20 of them or 25 of them were women. So I was kind of fortunate to start then, because I was once in a while hitting the podium, even as a new ultra runner, simply by numbers, age group numbers. So. And that's also interesting, too. I think that the statistics I looked up showed that the average age of the ultra runner today in 2021 is 42.5. So that it's getting to be younger. I think in the early days, it was closer to the late 40s that people were starting to ultra run, simply because they're evolving from shorter road racing, perhaps, and finding out that they've lost their speed as they hit their 40s. Mm-hmm. Not really, those fast twitch muscles aren't quite as performance as they used to be. So they evolved into ultra running in the early to mid 40s. So it's still an older population group of runners, even though we do see a lot of new young people coming into the sport. They're still holding in the low 40s for the average age of ultra runners.
It is. And for those of you that may not know this, females don't peak in ultra running until their mid 50s. So there's still lots of time if you're thinking, oh, maybe I want to do that. You know, oh, I'm too old. You're not too old. And even if you're into your 50s, you can still ultra run. We're just saying from a competitive standpoint, the peak for them is by the mid 50s is kind of when they start to decline in competitiveness, if you will, in their age groups and in racing. But yeah,
that's very true. So I started at the age of 40. I was a very slow runner because I was a brand new runner, never had done any kind of races at all ever. And my first marathon was 5:48. And so 10 years later, I had trained and raced enough to bring my marathon time down to 3:57. And that was on a clock, not a chip time. And I was able to qualify for Boston Marathon as a 50-year-old runner. I ran all of my PRs at 51, 52, and 53. Wow. Ran my 50-mile PR, my 100-mile PR. And I even ran at 51, I think. I ran my half marathon PR, of all things.
Really?
So that was just a base of 10 years of running. While all my friends who started running in their 30s were slowing down at 40, I was getting faster since I just started at 40. So that was my experience with it.
Yeah, definitely there's time. You're not too old. And even if you would like to just do the running and not compete, there's plenty of running adventures for you beyond 50s. So don't let age discourage you.
We can't overlook the trail ultra marathon granddaddy of them all, Western States, which first started in 1974. It was safe to say, I think it was the very first 100-mile trail ultra marathon in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I think everyone knows how that started, but we can give you a little brief history on it if you haven't heard. Maybe you're a new ultra marathoner. Mm-hmm. So up in Squaw Valley to Auburn, there was a horse race. It was an endurance horse race over 100 miles where the riders and the horses would cross over the what is now known as the Western States Trail. And a rider named Gordy Ainsley, who had ridden in this race quite a few times with his friends, was not able to get his horse up to racing speed. His horse was lame. And so as the race started to approach and he couldn't find a steed, he asked the race organizers if he could run the race on foot. And I think he probably was a pretty competent runner at the time. And he did. He started with the horses and he ran the whole Western States horse trail on foot. And I think he did it in 30 hours, if I'm not mistaken, which is how they've established a 30-hour cutoff time for the race, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he said, he was known to say, and I've met Gordy a few times and I've shared some, you know, meals with him at different races. And it was kind of funny because he used to run it was a pancake syrup bottle. He had two pancake syrup bottles. You know how they have a spout? You pull up the spout and you can pour out of it and then push the spout down. And they're handhelds. And he ran with those in the early days because this was back in the 70s before there were any running equipment on the market at all. And I saw him as recently as when I went to Western States in 1998 doing the Memorial Day weekend training runs at Western States, carrying his handy sandy syrup bottles as he was running around the trails. So he's, you know, he said that the horses in the Western States endurance ride, the horses were treated better than he was, he said. Because he would come into the aid stations, they would be holding the horses. You know, they hold them back and they make them stay a designated time in the aid stations. And the veterinarians are there and they're checking the heart rates and so forth, looking at the feet of these horses, the hooves, to check for damage. Mm-hmm. And they're just treating these horses like elites, which they are. Mm-hmm. And Gordy said nobody offered him any help at all. He just kind of ran through and people would look at him go through and say, "Who the hell was that just went by?" And so that was kind of his explanation to me when I talked to him about his first experience running the 100-miler.
Wow.
Quite a character.
You pretty much can't Google ultras without Western States popping up. So those of you that weren't sure what it was, now you have a little history about it. So,
and I think another thing that's becoming super popular today, again, are just timed runs. Mm-hmm. There's a Run for the Ages, is a rather new race that has a unique format. I believe it is, and I'm just, again, guessing, but I believe you get your age in years, in hours to run the race or something like that. Huh. And it's called Run for the Ages. And because a lot of the early ultra runners who were big names like Gordy Ainsley and Trayson and among many others, they can be seen at these Run for the Ages races where they are just like everybody else, just plodding along at their own particular speed now that they're in their 60s. And Gordy might be close to 70, I'm guessing. So road races are becoming more popular nowadays, as are timed races where people run around in a big circle over and over, just counting laps on their chip counter. Mm-hmm. You know, and getting their miles in that way, because of course they don't have to worry about cutoff times.
Right. And it's a challenge for them to see how many miles they can go
however
many hours. So it's also a really easy way for people to be supported with crewing and such, because everything's usually centrally located, which is nice. So that's a good option for some people when they don't want the challenge of the
It's a great starting point too. So if you want to run, let's say you want to run 100 miles and you're not sure what you need to know to be able to do it, you can join in on one of these 72-hour events or a 48-hour event. And that gives you an extra cushion of time to run your 100 miles during that race. And it's official, it still counts. Mm-hmm. And you can learn so much from those events that will teach you what you need to know to run a more high pressure, let's say point-to-point 100 miler.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So Nancy, what are some of these other classic races that they might stumble across or hear about if they start researching ultras?
Yeah, we have like the original, I think, Grand Slam of ultra running every summer, where a handful of people, it's growing now, of course, mm-hmm. more, are running the Grand Slam of ultra running. And I believe it's now Wasatch, Old Dominion, Western States, and Vermont. And some people are adding Leadville and Angeles Crest to that, because those are some of the oldest 100 milers in our country as well. Mm-hmm. But these are challenging races. Most of you know about Badwater. And although Badwater is more of a solo experience, it's still an official race, you know, but you have to provide all your own crewing and people, all your own aid station equipment. You know, you don't get to rely on the race itself. They just tell you when to start, when you have to make through certain checkpoints, and when you have to finish. And then they give you a buckle for finishing. So all these big races are really now, I think what's important for you guys to know is that they are accessible. They are things that you can do. So like I did the Badwater when I was 53 years old. I never would have imagined, you know, that the girl that sat behind the gym in high school smoking cigarettes would end up running and finishing the Badwater 135 Ultra Marathon. And for me, you know, the main point here is you can do it too. But you have to, you know, do these races and you have to learn the ropes and put in the time. And but don't ever say, oh, I could never do that. That's too elite for me or that's too hard for me. So my favorite race here in Southern California that I also finished is Angeles Crest 100. And yours truly is you, Sarah, are running that race this next summer of 2022.
I am.
Your first Angeles Crest 100 and your first 100.
It is. Yes. So my 100-mile journey was supposed to start last summer. And unfortunately, I did not get to run that race. I chose to move to my second, now going to be my long-term location here in California, which is fine. Life happens.
Your last move.
Yeah, exactly. I'm totally fine with, but life happens. And it's a good example of sometimes you got to reevaluate. And I really wanted to do it. And you know what? I could have run my 100, but it wouldn't have been the experience I wanted. And that I did not want. So we chose to reschedule that and chose some other goals along the way. And it ended up being that AC is going to be my first instead, which will be very memorable. And I'm sure I'm going to love it and hate it, but I'm sure I'm going to love it more in the end.
Yeah, it's a tough race. I think we've looked that up as well. And Angeles Crest has like 24,000 feet of gain. And I want to think 26,000 feet of descent.
You know, yeah, we found a couple
numbers, right?
Yeah, we found a couple numbers that were contradicted. So we're not really sure what the accurate one is, but it definitely is a challenging course. And then you add the heat to it, as you kind of shared a little bit about,
yes,
Nancy.
And yes. It's in also August.
And it has a demanding cutoff for it. I think it's 33 hours.
That's correct.
For it. So
I used almost every minute to do it. So when I did it, it was at 31:26. So I was about 35 minutes ahead of the finish cutoff.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's hard. That's hard to, again, to be.
It is.
Like, what time is it? And does the aid station time, does their clock match your watch? Mm-hmm. And do they even know what the cutoff time is at those aid stations? Because those people are not race officials. They're volunteers, bless their hearts, but they don't always have accurate information. But
you
can do it. Like I said, you can do it. If a 53-year-old woman, housewife, or a smoker can finish the Angeles Crest 100, you've got both feet in and you're going to be great, especially since you have Ultra Mama crewing for you.
I do. I have the best crew chief ever. And I've got a good crew we're putting together and I'll be trained up and ready for it. I've already started doing some strengthening, learning some weaknesses along the way, which is absolutely what you want to do when you're preparing for something like that. You want to find them earlier, not during the race. So definitely we'll go in educated and trained and ready. And I think it's going to be an adventure of a lifetime.
And then when all is said and done and you stand under that starting banner, it's just a crapshoot.
That's right. Everyone knows that.
It really is a roll of the dice for sure.
On some of our future episodes, we will be discussing the training process that it takes to train for something like AC 100. And so look forward to hearing more about that adventure with us. And we'll just give you the real talk when it comes to that.
Absolutely. And so, for those of you that might want to, why not pick out your own 100-mile race near the middle to the end of next summer? And,
absolutely.
You know, we have Ultra Ladies have training plans on our website. They're for free. Mm-hmm. You can download a free generic training plan for your 100-mile training run. And then you can listen to our pod updates about how Sarah's training is going. Mm-hmm. And hopefully some of the things Sarah's going through will resonate with you and you can gain a little bit more confidence from her experience. Mm-hmm. And we can have you ask questions along the way and answer your questions in some of our podcasts as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So look for that information available in the show notes. We'll have links available there for you. And we look forward to connecting with you on all of those. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of What the Fuck is Ultra Running, and we hope to catch you on our next podcast shows. Have a good day and see you out there on the trails.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, friends, for listening today. Your support helps us continue to bring you valuable content. So remember to like, subscribe, and share on your preferred channels. You can connect with us personally on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Links to those, as well as our production team, sponsors, and guests, can be found in the show notes.
Female-owned and supported, The Ultra Lady Show is also made possible with help from Stephanie Winninger Marketing, an ultra-running working mom who also does podcast production, website design, e-commerce, SEO, and more. And Catherine, a spunky 9-year-old who created our music and who's already running towards amazing things. Till next time, let's get out there and be more ultra, less lady. Show is sponsored by Trail Run Events, host of amazing races in beautiful places. Their next race is the Valley Crest Trails 10K and Half Marathon, happening Saturday, June 11th on the historic Mulholland Fire Road. Treating runners to valley and ocean views, this race is located outside the hustle of Greater Los Angeles, but close enough for day tripping or sightseeing. These distances are perfect for trail newbies or those needing a training race. For a complete list of races, visit trailrunevents.com or follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.